I think this is very big that Xi Jinping decided to come here. Clearly, Xi Jinping wouldn't have come here with his wife if there was going to be hostile. And it really is up to the Chinese to decide whether this is going to be a hostile meeting or not. I think they're going to work it out. I think they're going to say, listen, we will talk to them. We'll work things out. You have the number one and number two economies in the world and the number one and number two militaries in the world meeting together at Mar-a-Lago. This is a great thing.
What we need to do, we need to stop Bashar Assad's planes from flying, and we can do that easily. Just say, don't fly or you're going to get shot down. And if you start operating out of the six bases that they have, we're going to crater your runways with cruise missiles and other weapons. But you can't fly. And we'll tell the Russians, it's your guy. You join us in stopping him from flying and committing these war crimes. Then I would have safe zones, and there's a lot of other things. But the first thing we ought to do, stop his ability to slaughter people.
At the direction of the president, U.S. forces conducted a cruise missile strike against a Syrian Air Force airfield at about 8:40 p.m. Eastern time in Syria. That was 4:40 a.m. The strike was conducted using Tomahawk land attack missiles, TLAMs. A total of 59 TLAM missiles targeted aircraft, hardened aircraft shelters, petroleum and logistical storage, ammunition supply bunkers, air defense systems, and radars at that Syrian base.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Friday. It's April 7th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for being with us on another edition of The Opening Bell. It is another business day, our last of the week. Everybody looking forward to the weekend. Coming up a little bit later in the program, we're going to be checking in with Rick Cini, talk a little bit about some cheap airfare. Are there deals to be had as we head into the summer season? That'll be coming up in our next segment. And in just a few seconds, we'll bring in Paul Nolte to our conversation for our portfolio check here on our Friday. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the numbers this morning show the Dow futures off about 32 points. S&P futures are off about 4. Things have recovered since the height of the attack last night on Syria. The futures were a lot lower then. NASDAQ futures off about 9 this morning. Crude oil is trading up as well. In Europe, take a look at some of the markets there. Generally lower. The FTSE is the only market index that is a little bit higher there this morning, but not by much. Markets are generally mixed in Asia as well. The Nikkei finishing up, going to finish up about a third, 67 points, with the Hang Seng off. The Shanghai is up this morning. Oil, again, as I mentioned, after last night's attack, trading higher, 52.49 a barrel on the New York Merck. Indexes mostly mixed after the world was watching the U.S. fire missiles at Syria during President Trump's first meeting with China's president, leaving investors on edge over the global outlook. It'll be interesting to see what happens today. During the broadcast today, we'll keep you posted on what's happening in Syria. U.S. warships fired 60 cruise missiles at a Syrian airbase in retaliation for that chemical attack on civilians earlier this week. Other news making the headlines this morning, South Korean electronics giant Samsung posted a 48% jump in profits for the first 3 months of the year, beating analyst expectations. The dollar fell against the yen and the euro. Let's bring in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, happy Friday. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
So what do we look for immediately after this military action? We're seeing oil, gold, treasuries moving in all kinds of directions. What's happening?
Yeah, and that is the normal knee-jerk reaction to events like this. It was a surprise. The way was kind of paved, if you read between the lines of some of the comments that came out from Tillerson, Secretary of State, and certainly by Trump over the last couple of days, that this might be on the table. But the fact that now that we've actually fired missiles, you get the safe haven trades. Everybody runs to the dollar. They run to gold. Certainly with Syria in energy, they run to oil as well, and the U.S. Treasury market. You know, it's the safe haven investments. We'll see that unwind as events settle over the next few days.
As I mentioned, as we checked the markets first, there was initially a knee-jerk reaction. We saw things go pretty lower last night. recovering now. Why would that be happening? Is just as we get more details and see that this wasn't a huge deal or a one-off?
Yeah, no, that's normally what happens. You get that self first and ask questions later. And now that we have some of the questions answered and investors feel okay with things and understand what's going on, there's now that opportunity to come into the markets and buy. And as we've talked about in the past, you know, it's really the markets over the long run move off of the economy and earnings. In the short run, it's very emotional. And so that's what we're seeing is that emotion coming to the surface.
All of this, of course, happening as the Chinese president and Donald Trump meet down in Florida. That in itself is a big story. And to add military action on top of it, it looks like China is kind of watching as the rest of the world is with a little bit of trepidation, not necessarily backing what we did. But what are your thoughts having seen the two leaders together? It looks like they're getting along.
Well, you know, the fact that he doesn't golf doesn't hurt necessarily. But the fact, I think really what it's going to be is, as it is with any meeting with two people, it's just an understanding of where each other is coming from. And having that dialogue face-to-face and talking to each other about goals and objectives for China as well as the United States. What am I expecting from you? What are you expecting from me? So I think it's good from that perspective. What comes out of it, we'll see over the next few months.
We heard in the opening montage there one analyst talking about the fact that the Chinese president's here is a good thing, right? Because if he really had bad feelings about us or President Trump, he probably wouldn't have come all that way.
Oh, right. And that's what I'm saying. It's a good thing that they're sitting at the same table looking at each other as opposed to on the phone talking to each other or talking through their various emissaries. So, again, it's trying to understand what the policies will be, what our expectations are going to be, and what we're looking for from both sides. Yes, absolutely, it's a good thing, and we'll be seeing over the next couple months how this all unfolds.
All right, Paul, hang on. We'll continue our pre-dawn conversation with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management here on the Opening Bell this Friday edition.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, major U.S. benchmarks ended slightly higher on Thursday, the Standard & Poor's 500 adding 4.5 points, the Dow Jones closing 15 points higher at 20,662, the NASDAQ gained 14.5 points. The parent company of 7-Eleven will buy more than 1,100 convenience stores from Sunoco in a $3 billion deal. It includes most of the stores that Sunoco has, along with gas stations in 18 states. 7-Eleven will soon have 9,800 locations in the U.S. and Canada. Hard Rock has unveiled a $375 million plan for the shuttered Trump Taj Mahal Casino in Atlantic City. The company, owned by the Florida Seminole Indian Tribe, purchased the casino from investor Carl Icahn last month. It plans to draw on the Hard Rock's collection of music memorabilia to help brand the new resort and casino. And 4 days after a train derailed at New York's Penn Station and created major headaches for commuters, service is expected to return to normal today. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 520 on the Friday edition of our program. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management is here from Chicago. Paul, this week we got to see the Fed minutes. Any surprises there?
Oh, there were a bunch of surprises. And it's part of the reason why we saw the markets, which were trading up at about 150 points to the positive, actually finish negative on the day. It was a combination of talking about their balance sheet and talking about trying to make it a little bit smaller and specific reference to the financial markets, saying that they thought that they were a little bit ahead of where they should be and above fair value, not quite making the allusion or comparison to Greenspan's irrational exuberance back in the 90s, but along those lines. And when they start talking about stocks being expensive, people sit up and pay attention.
And I think the quote was they were quite high. Quite high is what they said.
Exactly.
The other part of this, too, and this might be a little bit of education for folks who are listening who are not necessarily business geeks, but they talked a lot about their balance sheet, $5 trillion. They want to start pushing that down. First of all, give us a sense of how much money that is. And what do they mean by that? What's the balance sheet, and what do they mean by all this?
When they went into quantitative easing, they bought up a bunch of bonds. They bought a lot of mortgage-backed securities. They bought treasuries, et cetera, and in essence became the market and pushed. And that was what pushed interest rates down so much. There was that ready demand for securities. So now they're trying to unwind that. And what they've been doing with the interest payments that they've earned and so on is buying securities. So it creates demand in the marketplace. If that demand goes away, what it's going to do is push up interest rates, because now I don't have those securities that I'm being purchased. Somebody else has to buy them. And if there's not a ready buyer for that, prices will fall, yields will rise a little bit in order to clear the market. But we're talking about a huge number. And I don't think a lot of people have a clue as to what $5 trillion is. We have an idea of millions. Billions, kind of, sort of, but trillions is way out there as far as size.
There's just a lot of zeros. I know that.
It's a thousand billion dollars is a trillion. It's a thousand of those. Yeah. So when you look at it, you can cover a table with pennies and pick up one of them and say, there you go. That's what we're talking about here.
I heard somebody yesterday say it's enough to buy every company on the S&P 500.
And get change back.
Yeah. So how do they begin lessening that? And what, do they just start reinvesting in the market or pushing money back into the market?
What they're going to, I think, wind up doing is, as things mature and not reinvested in the market, they'll take that cash back and then turn it back over to the Treasury. So what they're going to do is stop buying or slow down the pace of buying. And they have to do it in a fashion, again, that doesn't disrupt the markets. And it's part of the reason why that discussion is on the table to start with, is they want to let the markets know this is coming. And again, that's some of what has roiled the stock market, realizing that we're going to have to unwind this. The fact that we've taken 5-6 years to get to this point and we're now trying to unwind it, it's going to be a long unwind. The other part of it is we're the only ones doing it right now.
Yeah.
Japan and the ECB, European Central Bank, are still in the quantitative easing mode and still buying securities. So we're well ahead of that curve right now.
We got to see the ECB minutes this week, too. It looks like that might be coming to an end, though. There's some signal that might be ending.
That might be ending. That is, the key word is might.
So, we've been talking about everything but the big story that's going to happen today, which is the jobs report. I joked to you that maybe President Trump saw the jobs report last night and wanted to... But I don't think that's the case, right? We're looking for a pretty decent report.
We are. It's going to be probably in the 150 to 175 range, maybe on the top end of that. It's going to be less than the last couple months. The warm weather in February may have pulled forward some of the construction jobs, so they may not have as many new construction jobs in the month of March as they did in February. Again, some mathematics behind it and seasonal adjustments. But it should be a good report. We're looking at, of course, wages. We want to see wage growth pick up here in order to keep the economy going.
What would be a good wage figure to see today?
We'd really like to see wages come up maybe 0.3% or more. Again, that would indicate that on a year-over-year basis that we're getting closer to 3% wage growth. Now, that will get the Fed's attention and, again, create the need for the Fed to want to increase interest rates to keep the inflation fears at bay. So, again, it's kind of a catch-22. You want wages to grow, but not enough to get the Fed all involved and increase interest rates.
What would a 0.3 be for real world? What would that mean for generally, if you had to extrapolate that out over the economy? Does that mean I'm making a couple pennies more an hour? Or what?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the hourly wages, you're talking about 3 cents on the wages. When you take a look at the average hourly wage, it's not a huge dollar, but again, you're doing the division and you wind up with that third of 1%.
And remind us again, Professor Paul, the reason why this is important, because if I have more money in my pocket, the economy does better because I'm theoretically outspending.
So, when we look at the consumer sentiment numbers, consumers are very bullish. We're not seeing it in the hard data. That goes back to that discussion we had last week with the hard data, soft data. The soft data being, what do you feel? How do you think about things? The hard data being retail sales, industrial production, and all the stuff where we're making stuff, buying stuff, the hard economic data. So far, that has not come through yet. We'd like to see it. Certainly, wages are going to be part of that.
Paul, I can see why you're a good professor, why you teach classes. I thinking back to my college economics classes, not as exciting as when I sit and listen to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, good. Have a good weekend. You got anything going to be outside this weekend, I guess?
I'm hoping the weather holds and we can get outside and play in the sunshine a little bit for the first time in a while. We haven't seen the sun in, I think, about 4 weeks now.
It's been maybe 3 months, I think. But 70 degrees is going to feel nice. Have a good weekend, Paul.
You too. Thank you.
From ABC News Tech Trends, keeping phones on lockdown. Yonder is a pouch designed to hold cell phones, effectively locking them up until after a live performance or other event. The response from audiences has been largely positive.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it allows you to have more focus.
So I think it's good to be able to be present for an experience. I mean, that's why you're going out to live shows anyway.
Comedians and other live performers, including Chris Rock, Alicia Keys, Louis C.K., and Dave Chappelle, have begun to deploy Yonder pouches at their events. Concertgoer Patrick Rashino says it also prevents anyone from illegally recording and distributing a performance.
I think it's a good idea to limit people's interactions with the outside world and being their ability to record in certain venues.
Authorized staff waiting in a hallway have special wands to unlock the Yonder pouch at any time in case of an emergency call. With Tech Trends, I'm Mona Rivera, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37. Glad to have you along for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. This past week, the 787-10 Dreamliner took to the air for the first time. It was a big show by Boeing, and the aircraft is the latest version of the Dreamliner, which is really making, revolutionizing air flight. We thought we'd bring in Rick Cini of faircompare.com, based out of Dallas this morning, to talk more about this. Rick, I know you saw the flight, the 787 Dreamliner, the 787-10. What do you think of the aircraft?
Well, Steve, I mean, the Dreamliner is basically a whole new generation of aircraft, carbon fiber-based wings, and part of the actual body itself, a different type of experience. They actually designed the interior of the Dreamliner to actually have more vaulted ceilings. It gave a more airy effect, an airy effect to the overall flight experience, a much more fuel-efficient aircraft. I did have some trouble getting off the ground initially with some batteries and lithium batteries issues. It was delayed by several years. But essentially, we're seeing this aircraft being used by people like Norwegian Airlines, who are now flying to Europe. And they had tickets recently from the U.S. to Europe under $300 round trip. It also allows, the aircraft has an extended range. And because it has fewer seats, usually around 300 or so or less, in this particular situation, it can fly out of certain cities. Like, for example, they would never fly nonstop, for example, Austin to London or one of the cities that they have some of these. But they will do it with this aircraft because it's a perfect aircraft to actually fill up that plane from cities that you would normally do. Typically, you would only fly transoceanic to either on the Pacific side to Asia or to Europe over the Atlantic using hub cities with the much bigger aircraft. So it's a completely different way to look at things, and there's lots of these aircraft on order over the next 20 years.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my next questions, is are we just seeing these generally on those international flights, or are they around domestically?
You can find them a positioning flight here or there where then they're actually positioning, but almost all of them are exclusively used for medium to long-haul flights, typically transoceanic.
Rick, this is springtime here in Chicago. We're no strangers to severe weather. It seems like it crops up almost every other day. What should people who are flying know about severe weather and these last-minute cancellations and delays?
Well, a couple different things. First of all, if you look at the last 3 or 4 years, between 15% and 20% of flights are delayed and canceled over the next 3.5 months. That's one in five of us is going to experience some sort of issue. Now, some of these delays are only 15 to 20 minutes, so it's not as big a deal as it might look, but it's still a bit of a hassle. And the important part is a couple different things. When you first make your reservation, it's really important that you provide digital communication pathway, either email address, cell phone number, even a regular regular phone number. They'll do voice calls in some cases with an automated robot to let you know if your flight's delayed or canceled, especially if it's canceled. Typically what happens nowadays, since there's no humans involved, they automatically rebook you several days in the future, and you don't want that trip. And if you don't actually really, really cancel your flight, you're on the hook for that flight if you just think it's been canceled and you're going to get a refund. I think the other thing, too, is on the day before, it's really important people actually sign up for flight status alerts. I like to sign up for myself and anybody on the other side that may be picking me up so we have the same quality information. But I will caution people, when you do get a flight status alert and says your flight's delayed 3 or 4 hours, that doesn't mean you get the luxury of heading to the airport 3 or 4 hours later. You have to actually go at the original time, because if they do undelay your flight and it happens from time to time, you're still on the hook for that ticket.
And you almost have to become a weather geek, too, because if it's nice here in Chicago and there's bad weather somewhere else, your flight out of Chicago could be impacted. So you have to almost get all the weather apps and be up on everything, don't you?
You do. And the Flight Stats and FlightAware have some great websites. They show an overlay. And you do have to be a little bit of a weather geek. Now, I will note that airlines have, over the last 5 or 6 years, done a completely sort of about face when it comes to actually canceling flights ahead of time. They have several meteorologists on staff. They have some actuaries on staff calculating. And they found out over the last 7 or 8 years that it's much better to pre-cancel flights than it is to actually have their pilots, crews, and passengers stuck in different cities across the nation when these issues occur. It's much easier to unwind in that particular situation. They actually save money.
And if you're flying out of Chicago, what cities likely will impact Chicago first if they're having
severe weather? Typically it rolls in from the northeast, and you have sort of a triad of airports in the LaGuardia, JFK, Newark area. Sometimes Philadelphia will be part of that, and that starts to roll its way. So if you actually have to get somewhere, absolutely have to be somewhere when you're buying a ticket, your best choice is to pick the first flight out in the morning, because the first flights typically are not the problem. It's later on in the day when you have weather in other parts of the country.
And this could be impacted. Let's say you're flying to California from Chicago, but if your equipment is in New York and it's being impacted by storms, you could still be delayed.
Yeah, the entire west coast of the United States could be sunny as it can be, but later on in the day, if those flights can't make their way over from the east coast, you're still going to have delays and cancellations.
So what is on your phone? What apps do you like in terms of keeping track of not only flights but weather?
Yeah, so I actually have a variety of ones. I like the AccuWeather app because it has the radar displays, especially for across the country. I also have Flight Stats and FlightAware apps for those, for flight status alerts. I also have all the airline apps because the boarding passes there. And they also, if you sign up and click the little box, you can also get flight status alerts there as well. So all those are really handy for good quality information.
Rick, I know you had to see Harrison Ford landing his plane on an active taxiway right next to two big jetliners. Nothing's going to happen to him, we're learning. How big a deal was that?
If it had been me, probably it would have been a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal because it does get some play, but essentially we all know what happens if you have a big name. Nothing really ever happens to you in this particular case.
So, I just saw those two jets there, the Southwest jet and another jet, and I thought, oh, those are full of passengers.
Well, this is not the first time. I believe there's a golf course involved several years ago
right.
So I think there's probably a time when you probably should have your license pulled.
Yeah. So get us out of town, Rick. Any place good to go cheaply?
Yeah, I was actually looking at the tail end of May to see what kind of deals were out there. It turns out that, so if you're heading out to the West Coast, you have sort of two options. Northwest Portland is your cheapest at about $200 round trip in late May. This is before kids get back out of school. Los Angeles at $190. Those prices are up slightly. The prices jumped in the last 2 weeks in May and are going to jump again after the first week in June. So just be aware of that. If you're heading out to the East Coast right now, really, it's been this way for the last 5 or 6 months. Boston, New York, Washington, because of the ultra-low-cost competition, are all under $160 round trip. Those are very inexpensive tickets historically. And then your best bet right now is Orlando at $170 round trip compared to Miami at $230.
All right, Rick, happy travels.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Sini is the founder and CEO of FairCompare.com, based out of Dallas. You can follow FairCompare at FairCompare on Twitter, and Rick Sini
at Rick Senior.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:49. Let's get the latest from the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. This morning, Dow futures are pointing down right now, off about 12 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are a little bit lower as well. Gold and silver are trading up. Gold almost a full percent. Crude oil at $52.35 a barrel. Here are some stories that we've been watching for you. The date now set, 24th, I believe, is the date that there will be a full vote on President Trump's choice to become U.S. Agriculture Secretary. During his confirmation hearings last week, he was pressed by the Senate committee that was hearing about him, about the administration's plan, 21% cut to the agency's fiscal 2018 discretionary spending. He said that somehow, as ag secretary, he would try to manage to it, but these would include proposed ag and rural program cuts that are significant, almost 21%. According to some estimates. Some other stories that we're watching for you this morning. Samsung Electronics says its first quarter profit jumped 48%, a better than expected result analysts believe to be driven by strong smartphone components. Quarterly earnings preview shows how Samsung's business is booming while its stock trades near historic highs despite unprecedented crises in recent months. Samsung scrapped its flagship smartphones last year after they started overheating and catching fires. Facebook is launching a resource to help you spot fake news and misinformation that spreads on its service. Features similar to a previous effort around privacy and security. It's basically a notification that will pop up on top of your news feed for a few days. Clicking on it takes you to tips and other information about how to spot fake news. Tips to spot fake news include looking closely at website addresses to see that they are not a spoof of real news sites. President, Vice President of Newsfeed at Facebook says he's hoping people will become more discerning consumers of news. Also today, there is a big recall, another big recall of Takata airbags. ABC News correspondent Dave Schreiber with that.
Honda is recalling 37,000 of its vehicles in the United States. Honda wants to see if replacement airbags contain the recalled Takata inflators they say may have gone into vehicles before the big Takata recalls last year. Honda says the recall of front airbag inflators from the 2003 two-door Accord does not affect vehicles in other regions. It says no ruptures were reported. The inflators are blamed in at least 16 deaths and over 180 injuries around the world. The inflators can explode with too much force, sending out shrapnel. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
House Republicans have left Washington for the spring recess with no deal on health care. Leaders frustrated as they try to resolve disputes between moderates and conservatives on GOP health care issues. ABC's Kenneth Moten has been watching things in Washington.
House Republicans left for a two-week spring recess with no deal to repeal and replace Obamacare. Speaker Paul Ryan admits there's more work to do.
There are additional reforms and ideas that can do both things, protect people with pre-existing conditions and continue to lower premiums.
Wednesday night, Ryan met with White House Chief of Staff Rex Priebus and other officials who were unhappy the GOP bill remains unfinished. Kenneth Moten, ABC News, Washington.
Twitter's defying a U.S. government request for records that could identify users behind an account opposed to President Trump and is challenging the order in court. The company filed a lawsuit in federal court against the Department of Homeland Security and its Customs and Border Protection office, charging that its efforts to unmask the people behind the account violates the First Amendment. Twitter says its users have a constitutional right to disseminate such anonymous and pseudonymous political speech. The account in question is AltUSCIS, a reference to the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Office. The account describes its users to the Associated Press in February as employees and former employees of the agency. Twitter declined to comment. Beyond the lawsuit, DHS likewise declined to comment. And now, your money.
Hey, it's your money. There's a reason that you weren't seeing too many help wanted signs at your local mall.
In the first quarter, we know that job cut announcements were led by the retail sector, and there's no end in sight to that, unfortunately. So tens of thousands of retailing jobs are being lost on a monthly basis.
Bankrate's Mark Hamrick says it's a result of consumers making the shift from brick-and-mortar stores to online retailers, and he says that's probably another reason you're going to see more going out of business sales in the months and years to come. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Margarine's fortunes seem to be taking another sad turn with the owner of Country Crock, and I can't believe it's not Butter looking for someone to take the brands off their hands. Consumer products heavyweight Unilever says it's seeking to unload its spreads business that suffered from soft sales in the United States and other developed markets as more people move away from margarine and those other processed spreads and, believe it or not, back to butter. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, April 7th. A couple of big reports today. Obviously, the jobs report is going to be the big one. It's an updated picture of the economy. The Labor Department report looks at March. It is the first full month under President Trump that will be measured for the jobs report. Also today, the Commerce Department reports on wholesale trade inventories for February, and the Federal Reserve releases consumer credit data. A couple of other big events today. Induction ceremonies for the latest members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 32nd in Brooklyn. It will be Joan Baez, Electric Light Orchestra, Journey, Pearl Jam. Yes, Nile Rodgers also being honored there with the Award for Music Excellence. And the UN marks the Day of Remembrance for Victims of the Rwanda Genocide. Today remembers and commemorates the deaths of nearly 800,000 people during the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, April 7th.